Yeah. Now, in your little Greek grammars, if you have your little Greek grammars, get them out. We're going to... I'm meeting Brother Michael's request tonight. He...
This guy did that?
Yeah, he did it. You can bust him if you don't like what he's done now.
Well, what do you want?
You know, he takes the class. He's not here every week. But he studies this class, and he knows every one of you and all your comments, and even the songs you sing, because he has listened to all of these classes by way of his automobile, cassette player, and CD player. And there are many others all over the world. Like I've said, 40,000 people listen to our classes a month. That's a lot of people.
You're talking about Davis's grammar book?
Yeah, no, I'm talking about my grammar book, the one I wrote right there, Jim Phillips' grammar book. The little short one, the little brief one.
Oh, okay.
No comments, hardly. Just straight.
Greek. You didn't bring that one either.
You didn't bring... That's all right. You're going to know what I'm going to say.
Oh, okay.
All right. 1969, you graduated, didn't you?
8, 3, 4, 5, 6, 67.
Oh, 67.
Yeah.
60. I started in 69. You
I got out there before you got there.
That's right.
Thankfully.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's look at something here. I don't get into the Greek grammar very often because we learn it anyway. We learn to read the words, so you're going to learn how to read Greek anyway. But I'm going to go back just a little bit and teach you some things that's in the... Remember I told you that... And Brother David here a while back, you said if you study this little book, this little brief pamphlet, it'll take you... How long, Brother David?
I haven't got there yet.
How many years? Three now?
Three.
Well, there's a lot in this little book. If you learn everything in the book, you'll know Greek fairly well. We're just going to look at one page where it has a Greek alphabet, okay? How many of you know the Greek alphabet? How many of you don't know the Greek alphabet?
I would hold up my hand, but I wouldn't want you to ask me to say it.
All right. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, theta, e, iota, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, omega, con, phi, rho, sigma, tau, epsilon, phi, kip, psi, omega. Is that good enough?
That's right.
Alex, Beth, Gamel, Zalet, Evon, Zest, Zest.
My wife taught me that.
She taught you that.
A long time ago.
All right. Anyway, Greek. Now, if you look on here, you'll see... Now, this was the... There are some secrets to this, okay? That's what I'm going to show you. And this is something we don't usually go into, but if you have a little book or little page here where it says grammar. Now look over here to your far left thing. Brother Mike, what's it say right up here at the top?
Typed letter.
If you have a computer or a typewriter, this was, you know, the old Selectra 2 typewriters and stuff and some of the early computers. On the typewriter or the computer, if you type this letter in there, out comes the Greek.
Okay. That's only if you have the correct fonts.
If you have the correct font
downloaded into your computer.
Now, they have changed fonts, so this may not be totally correct on yours. But I imagine that A is alpha. All right? A is alpha. See that? Now, the first thing you see is a capital alpha, and then you see it in the small letter. We have the uppercase, the capital letter, and we have it in the lowercase, alpha and alpha, just a big A and a little a. All right? And then beta. Say alpha.
Alpha.
All right, beta.
Beta.
Everybody knows that because there's some kind of... in these schools, they have a what?
Alpha beta and alpha beta.
Alpha beta store.
I was thinking more with my stomach, like him, the supermarket.
Oh, a supermarket. But there are these clubs and sororities. All right. So we have alpha and we have beta. Now, alpha and beta doesn't look anything different than what English does it? Because English borrowed the Greek alphabet. Okay. So you're not going to learn anything new. Alpha and beta and then gamma. Now, gamma, it looks like kind of like a Y, all right? The little one does, and the other one looks kind of like an R almost, the capital does. Now, in the uncials, which is the old Greek manuscripts, they're all handwritten and everything, you'll see in different fonts, different ways that they printed things, but this is basically, okay? And alpha, beta, and then gamma, it's like our G, okay? The word angelos, we have alpha, gamma, gamma, alpha, all right? So we have gamma. Our word angel came right out of the Greek word angelos. And then delta. Now, there used to be a delta truck line, wasn't there? Maybe there still is a delta truck line. And delta. Delta? What?
Airlines.
Oh, yeah, Delta Airlines. Well, the delta just looks like a triangle like that, capital, and then the other one is like this. All right? Or like that. Kind of almost like an S with a loop at the bottom of it. So that's delta. And they sound like alpha, beta, gamma, delta, just like they sound there, all right? And then epsilon. Epsilon. It looks like an E and an E. As simple as that. So you didn't learn anything new, did you? Nothing to be afraid of. And then zeta. Zeta is like, it's a Z, basically. And there's nothing, it looks like a Z, doesn't it? And then there's a, like that, the little one. Just like that. Zeta. Now, eta. Eta. Like A or A. It looks like an H and then like an N with a tail on it. All right? Are you? Am I boring you with this stuff? I used to teach Greek grammar for years and I hated it. The people would put them to sleep. All right? Theta. Theta. All right. Theta is an O. Right with a slash through it.
Write it on there so I can see it.
All right. Theta. All right. And it's like a TH, just like this.
That's a small one, right?
Well, it's the big one's just big. That's all. They have fancy ones. It'll look like this sometimes in some of the manuscripts and all kinds of stuff. But basically, that's what it is.
It's just like English. Everybody writes it a little different.
Yeah. And Hebrew is the same way.
Yeah.
Hebrew is the same way. All right, theta, and then iota. Now, that shouldn't scare you at all, because it looks just like your eye, okay? Just like an eye in English, iota. And then kappa. Now, that one's not too hard either, is it? Just like a K in English. And then lambda. All right, now lambda is like that, or like this. Lambda. Who can read that?
I can see it.
All right. Who can read that?
Logos.
Logos. Good deal. Logos. And it actually, when it's talking about Jesus, it should be capital. It wouldn't hurt if it was all capital. All right. That's like an L. And then a mu. That's like just like an M. By the way, your Roman numerals, have you ever heard of Roman numerals? They're really not Roman numerals. They're Greek numerals. Yes. They're not Roman numerals at all. They call them Roman numerals, but some grammar teacher needed a little education. That is an iota. That is a lambda in those languages. All of these things, they came from Greek, and they represented certain things. X is key. All right. We'll get to that in a little while. Move. M sound. New. N. It looks like an N, just like an English capital, and then it looks like a V in lowercase. And then we have key. That's the X. That's your X that you see in Roman numerals all the time. What?
Key.
Key. Yeah, key.
K-I.
Uh-huh. And then it's like this. In lowercase, it's like this.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
All right? And then we have Omicron. That one ought to be a real brain twister. Can you tell that one? O is O, isn't it?
Sure.
Omicron. Your short O. O and O. All right? And then your pi. And on the typewriter, it should be P and then in. If you take an algebra or any math, basically, you know what a pi looks like.
Yeah.
What? Mm-hmm. Have you been?
I'm in algebra right now.
All right.
Too late.
Okay, that's good. Well, you know epsilon, don't you? And alpha and beta. That's real easy.
Yeah.
Just like English. And then rho. It looks like an R. And then it looks like a P in lowercase. All right. And then sigma. It looks like an S. Now, there's, in English, Let me teach you a little English too while I'm at it. How many of you have old English books before 1800? All right. Old books written in English before 1800. All right. How many of you ever read the preamble or the Constitution? Just written in the old English.
Oh, no.
What's that say?
Congress, but I thought there would be both halves.
That's old English.
The last one's the final one.
After 1800, after 1800, it would have two S's. Now, I remember my teacher, when I was taking the Constitution, he would go read this and he would pronounce every one of these like it was an S. Congress. It's not Congress, it's Congress. All right? It's in Old English. English used to have an S and a final S. And Hebrew has a bunch of these little things. What, about five or six? I can't remember now. Well, in Greek, you have a sigma and a sigma, two S's. In the word, or in the front of the word, it's like this. Looks like an O with a little quiggly on top, and a final is like that. Brother Mike, that's what you were asking me about a while ago. All right, that's what it looks like. Now, let's see here. Huios. All right, Huios. All right. And, Sarks. Sigma and sigma. All right. Do you see the different one? That's what you call a sigma and a final sigma, or an S and a final S. English had that also. After 1800, all books after 1800 were printed differently. If you got one before 1800, it's going to have final S and an S in it. How many of you learned that tonight? Anybody? All right. That's good. So you learned something tonight. And it's not F in English, it's S. Two S's. All right. Tau. Tau. It looks like a English T, and basically it looks like a English T even in the lower case. And then we have the word, the infamous upsilon and epsilon. Most Greek grammars were written by Germans. Germans were some of the greatest Greek scholars in the world. Except they made a great big mistake. They tried to make Greek German. It is not upsilon, but it's ypsilon. In the diphthongs, where you have two vowels that make one sound, it does, like epsilon, ypsilon, e-u, it sounds like e-u. All right? But it's really ypsilon. And let me give you an example of that right here. There's another final S too. This, how do you say this word? Kyrios. Kyrios. Say it right in English. Kyrios. That's the way it's like a Y. It. Kyrios. I have a friend named Photios Kyriakos. All right? Photios Kyriakos. And Photios, his first name comes from the Greek word phos. It's Photios. Right. All right. Photios, and then it is Kyriakos, like that. That's a Y. Brought over in English, it's a Y. Simple as that. The Lord Kyrios. Kyrios. All right. Ypsilon, and then we have Phi. And this is where my name comes from, my last name. We have two combination sounds in Greek that look alike. One of them is theta, and the other one is Phi. All right? P-H-I and T-H. And they're just, you've got an O, and the PH one has got a vertical, and the theta has got a horizontal line to it. All right? That's a different symbol.
Phillips means speedy.
Huh?
Phillips means speedy.
Fast?
Speedy or fast?
No, it...
Doesn't it?
No, it means... Phillips means lover of horses.
Yeah, but
it comes from philo. It comes from philo and hippos, two Greek words.
Yeah,
philo.
It's always connected with a horse head.
Yeah, it's connected with a Philip of Macedon.
I'm connected to the other end.
All right. The horse's tail. All right. You know, now they make some good stuff out of horse's tail, those violin bows. You know, that's made out of horse's tail.
Are you related?
They make beautiful sounds.
Are you related to the apostle Philip?
The apostle Philip.
Yeah.
Well, Philip, that's his Greek name. All right. Philip is a Greek name. That's also an English name, but the English name came from Greek. Greek is Philip. Philo hippos is what it comes. Philo, I love, and hippos, horses. That's what it means. All right. And then T. There's you. There you go. Both ways. As in chasm, and then C. C. Pounds per square inch. PSI, all right? C. It looks like a pitchfork. All right? Kind of like sin chin in Hebrew. All right? And sin chin in Hebrew would be sin and chin. With a little dead over one side. Chin and sin. All right? And then we have omega. Omega, capital is like this, and then this is lowercase. All right? Did that help you any? No? Yes? See? And a no? Brother David.
Sometimes when I'm looking at the old Greek writing, everything's in capital letters.
That's uncios. No separation. That's how I learned to read Greek. I learned
that's
Greek.
The
only text I had was a uncial text. I brought it to the classroom. I went and separated every Greek word. There is no separation, no punctuation, or anything in uncial. All right. But that's the only Bible text that I had, so I learned how to read it. So when I went to the Middle East, I got to be the reader of the old manuscripts and all of that stuff. Do you have any questions on this?
Uncials.
Uncials. It's all capitals. The old manuscripts, the oldest Greek manuscripts, were all written in capitals. Okay? I'll give you an example of that. No punctuation whatsoever. Let's see if I can do it. That's the way it was written like that. NRK, ain ho logos, kai ho logos. All right? And it was all written together. There was no punctuation, no nothing.
Why did they do it that way?
That's just the way they did it, brother. I'm not old enough to argue with them, but that's just the way they did it. And that's the way I learned to read Greek. What?
Paper word here.
In beginning kept on being the word, and the word is what it says. All right? And this is a beautiful Hebrewism. Also, some of you are boring you plumb to death about it. But NRK, ain hologos. Hologos there, we know the word in Greek. But the Hebrews, that's a Hebrewism. It's not a Greek idiom. It's a Hebrewism. It's not, so you can't just say, in beginning kept on being the word. All right? What it means, it's referring to the Adonai of the Old Testament, or the name of God, or Kyrios in the Septuagint. The Septuagint was about 380 B.C. That was the translation of the Hebrew Bible into the Greek, and where they come to the name Yahweh, Jehovah. All right, we don't know how to say the word, can't pronounce it. Okay, unpronounceable word, they never tried to pronounce it either. In beginning, kept on being the Jehovah. And the Jehovah kept on being an inseparable part of the Godhead because Jehovah kept on being God. Or God kept on being Jehovah, whichever way you want to look at it. All right. So, that's what it's talking about. There's your Hebraism right there. It's not, you have to look through the Greek and realize what John was writing. Why did John write the gospel according to John? Why did he write it? To prove that deity, that the Jehovah flesh, he became, and he states that in John 1:14. Who can quote that one from me from Greek? Kai ho logos sarx akeneko. Okay. Kai and the Jehovah flesh sarx akeneko, he became. Third person singular, second aorist, indicative, middle voice. For himself he did it. All right. Very good. You got an A tonight, brother. All right. In 1 John 3 and verse 7. Are we ready to go on into the Greek now? We studied a little grammar, now let's study a little Bible.
John what?
John 3 and 7. 1 John 3 and 7. I hope that that kind of added two things instead of boring you to death. I taught Greek grammar for about 10 years, and boy, I couldn't hardly stand it.
A little bit of every so often would be good.
Yeah, well, I throw a little bit at you every now and then. Technia.
Technia.
Maydays.
Maydays.
Planato. Himas. Ho. Hoyon. Tain. Dikaiosune. Dikaios. Estin. Kathos. Ikinos. Dikaios. Estin. All right. Now let's look at this word. I mean, this verse, word for word. All right. You should be on 3:7. Do you find 3:7 there? All right. Technia. Technia. We get our word technology from this. We get our word. All right. Technia. What does technia mean? Now, we talked about this little word. All right. What does it mean?
Technology.
Well, we get technology from it, from this word. All right. But what does technos mean? Technia.
Little boy.
It means a live birth.
Live birth.
Birth. A live birth. That's what it literally means. A live birth. Live birth. All right. And it's a young child. Now, there is a Greek word, Braphos and Napios. Now, these are other words for young child. Braphos is very young. Napios is speechless baby. Braphos is just born. But technos, or technia, means a live birth. That's literally. If you have a child, and it's your child, it is your technia. It's your child, and it's alive. It was born, and it's okay.
Would he be referring to the born again here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Little live births now. Live births. Maydays. Can you say Mayday? Maybe. Remember that was an old tragedy. Mayday was something you hollered if you were in trouble. Mm-hmm. All right. And on the Titanic, they did something like this. Da-di-da-di-da-da-di-da. In other words, CQ. And then later on it came, did-di-dit, da-da-da, did-di-dit. S-O-S. Did-di-dit, S-O, da-da-da, and then did-di-dit. S-O-S, Morse code. Okay? And that's the way, matter of fact, all early radio was CW or Morse code. All right? And those were the signs for tragedy. All right. Mayday, just remember that. But this year is not May Day like that. It comes from May and Day and Ace. Three words. That's the second word there. May Day and Ace. And it May is like this.
and then day, and then ace. It's like that.
May day ace.
So he's referring to them as a possession, isn't he?
It is you have a child. You have a born child. It doesn't mean it, girl or boy. It didn't make any difference here. But it is a born, live, birth child. Okay?
So but isn't John kind of referring to my children?
Isn't our little children, my children, young children, little children. And then it says, what this one comes from, A is a particle of negation. Page 268, if you want to look up. Day, and then ace. Day is a weak adversative conjunction. All right? And then ace is a numeral, one. Moreover, not one is what it literally says. Moreover, not one. Moreover, not one. And then pla, not ta'o. And we get our word planet from this. Planet. Planet. What does a planet do? When you look out there, can you tell where a planet's going to be tonight and then tomorrow night? Is there a plan? The word plan comes from this. Is there a plan in the orbit of the planets? All right. A planet goes in a circle according to a plan. Okay? And planato, or planato, it's third person singular. Third person singular.
Grammatically.
All right. We're going to throw this little bit of grammar at you, too.
Can we just pronounce the third word in there?
Planato.
Planato.
Planato. We got a word plan. Planet. All right. Now, it's third person singular. All right, third person singular. First person singular is what? Who is it?
I.
Second person?
You.
Third person?
He,
she, or an it. The Greek has neuter. All right? And then that's singular, isn't it? All right, now plural. First person plural.
We.
We. All right, you Okies and Texans?
You all.
You all? Are ye? We really have a second person plural in English, which is ye. All right, King James wasn't all wrong. It had that right. All right, and then we have they. And then we have infinitive down here also. All right? That's two, whatever. Little children, no one. Third person singular, present, imperative, active. Imperative, it's present tense, so let's always do this. Present tense, that's continuous action. And it's active voice. And the imperative mode, what is the imperative mode? What is that?
Command.
That's a command. It's a command. Little children, don't allow yourselves to be led astray. Out of the pathway. All right? Himas. Ye, or you all. Accusative plural, second person pronoun. All right? And then, ho, poyo. Ho is nominative, singular, masculine, definite article. In Greek, it's ho, aristokon, or throne, and you'll see that in that little book in there. The definite article. It's a the. All right? A the. P-H-E. The. Nominative, singular, masculine. And then the word poem. We got our word poem from this word. All right? Now, see, Greek may be Greek, but it ought to be coming around just a little bit.
You have one in parentheses here. Shouldn't that be ones?
It is one. No, it's not plural. It's singular.
Plural.
It's singular because how many is it? Nominative. Look down there. Look at the participle that it's describing. Remember, the definite article agrees in number, gender, and case with the thing that it's modifying or pointing at. Okay? So that's, what does it say down there? Nominative, singular, masculine. Present participle. Active. Alright? Comes from poyo. It's poyon. So, and a present participle is something that just keeps on rolling. Alright? Keeps on going. Gerunds in English. Okay? doing, running, jumping, flying. These are all gerunds, and that's kind of what this is. Now, the participle in Greek is kind of a marriage between a noun and a verb. Because you're going to see it's going to be conjugated and declined both. Now, in Greek, you conjugate the verbs, and you decline the nouns and the definite articles and all of that. Okay? Everything. And how many cases are there in Koine and Classical Greek? How many cases are there? How many? Can anybody name those eight cases? Nominative, genitive, oblative, locative, instrumental, dative, accusative, and vocative. All right? That's what they are. And every Greek noun and every Greek participle is in one of those things. And then, now we just showed you the conjugation of verbs here. That's how you conjugate a verb. First, second, and third person singular and plural, and then an infinitive. All right? Now, we have that both in this participle right here. See, it's third person singular. All right? Third person singular. I mean, present participle active. I'll have the wrong thing. Present participle and active, and nominative singular and masculine. See that? It comes from poio. Comes from a verb, doesn't it? All right? But it is kind of a noun verb now. The one doing. Now, the word one there in parenthesis is what you call a practical substantive. I'm not foundering you people, are I?
No.
All right?
No.
This practical substantive is something that stands in there. Now, this is real important when you come to John 1 and 1, where the Jehovah's Witnesses try to make Jesus a God, because it's impossible grammatically to do that. All right? And right here, it says the one doing. The one doing or practicing continually. And the word one there, you're supplying that because it's understood. That's what you call a practical substantive. It's something that stands there. You can, the one, or the person. If you want to put person down there, all right? But it's nominative singular masculine, isn't it? So it's one. It's talking about each individual. And then we have the word tain, dikaiosyne. Dikaiosyne. All right? The one doing the righteousness. It comes from dikaios. Or dikio as a verb. And what does dikio or dikaios mean? What does it literally mean? Anybody remember? That means to judge correctly. Alright? An indictment. To bring a judgment against. Alright? Righteousness. The one practicing righteousness, righteous, dikaios. Third person singular, present indicative active. That is that little verb, to be verb. There's the linking verb or to be verb. All right, that's the same thing we have in John 1 and 1. Aim there is third person singular and perfect indicative active. The Word kept on being. In beginning kept on being the Word, and the Word kept on being toward the God or an inseparable part of the Godhead. Righteousness, and then righteous, He is. Third person singular. All right? Now, we're talking about a masculine person. We're doing this, what we call, just grammatically, because it can be a she or an it or whatever. But for argument's sake or anything, John has got a nominative singular masculine, so it has to be a he, doesn't it? Even though it can be a he or a she or an it, a child even. But it's he because it's going to agree with what's up above, the nominative singular masculine up there. Righteous he is. Kato comes from kata and hos. All right? According as, or just as. Ekinos. That's a nominative singular masculine. That's what we call an emphatic demonstrative pronoun. That ekinos. Who is that ekinos that we're talking about? That one. Who is that one? Now, you actually should put down in all capitals, huh? That one. Who is that one?
Jehovah.
That's a Jehovah that John 1:14. Kaihologos starts again. I'll go, and the Word, or the Jehovah flesh, He became and dwelt among us. He pitched His tent among us, And we beheld the glory as the glory of the only begotten God, full of grace and full of truth. And then in John 1:18, and it says there at the end of that verse, He led Himself out of eternity into space and time. Ekanago. He didn't declare Himself. He didn't explain Himself. Literally, He led Himself out. Period. That one, righteous dikaios, estin, He is, and He continues to be. Third person singular, present, indicative, active. Present tense, indicative mode, active voice. Present tense, that's happening. What about the indicative mode? Let's talk about the indicative mode. When you say something in English, if you say it's indicative, what does it mean? If it's indicative, what? It is what? It's a fact. In Greek, the indicative mode is a statement of fact. You accept something as a fact. If it's in the subjunctive mode, there's a subjunctive mode. Now, if it's in the subjunctive mode, what would it be?
Maybe.
It may or may not be. Every time when it comes to talk about salvation or atonement, it talks about in the subjunctive mode. May or may not be. Volition is involved. All right? Just He is, just as that one righteous He is. Now 3 and verse 8. Now there's a lot of cross references to these. In 3 and 7, 1 John 2:1, and 2:26 and 2:29 are all cross references to this, and many other places. And then 3 and 8. And I'm going to give you some of these beforehand. Matthew 4:3. Matthew 13:38. John 8:44. 1 John 3:10 and 1 John 3:5, John 12:31, and John 8:44. Now let's look at this one. This one here is going to scramble your brains. I could teach an hour on this verse very easily. Remember one time we taught 2 hours on one verse, didn't we? In the book of Ephesians. There is so much in each verse in Greek. You just jump over it in English, but boy, in Greek. Brother Hubbard used to tell a story a long time ago, and he got it from J. Lewis Guthrie, which was his language teacher. He said, when you look at the English Bible, it's like looking at something in black and white, like a black and white photograph. But when you look at it from Greek, you got 4D or 5D with all the colors there, everything. You got it in living life colors. And that's the way it is, and as you see, and as you study it, you're going to understand that, because it's going to explain itself thoroughly. All right. Now, who can say the first word there in Greek? Ho. All right. Ho. Poion. Tain. Hamartion. Ek. Tu. Come on. Diablo. Esten. Hote. Alp. Our case. Ho, Diabolos, Harmartane, Ace, Tuto, Ifane Rothe, Ho, Huios, Tu, Theu, Hina, Lise, Ha, Erga, Tu, Diabolu. Now, this is a big verse, a giant verse. Okay? So let's just kind of look at it. And it's, I could preach a sermon on each one of these last two verses. The first title of the first sermon, the last verse, was Break the Spell of False Religion. Don't let someone lead you astray. Break the spell of false religion. Now this one here is a man may sin securely but safely never. All right? Dogs and hogs are not sheep. All right? Dogs and hogs are not sheep. Now, some of the little tiles that I put on this verse. The one, ho, that the one is all in that, because now we have a nominee singular masculine definite article. Okay? That's a the. And a the is a pointer. It's like an index finger pointing to something. It's a sign. The one, practical substantive, and the word doing, All right. Nominee singular masculine, present participle acting. That one comes from poio. All right. Doing the sin. Tain hamartion. Now, I've taught you a little differently than this. But what do most of the pastors, I mean even educated pastors, say about the word hamartion? What do they say it means?
Missing the mark.
Missing the mark. Does it merely mean that?
According to
it doesn't mean to miss the mark. It does not mean to miss the mark.
Way to go, David.
Now, Brother David, you were listening to Melissa Scott here a while back. She picked that up, didn't she?
Yes, she sure did.
Where do you think she picked it up?
Probably from discoverytheword.com.
And Gene Scott. Haven't you ever heard Gene Scott and Melissa Scott?
But if you read Thayer's, it says it right
there.
Thayer
says it. That's right. And if you want to look up Thayer's, let's see here. I've got it written down there someplace. Page 30, all right? And page 17 on the Analytical Greek Lexicon. And both of them will say that it means to miss the mark. But then if you read the explanation to that, it is the equivalent of the Hebrew word chapa. Chatha means to miss the mark. All right? Chatha means to miss the mark. But the English or the Greek equivalent of chatha is nothing. There isn't one. Thayer and many of the Greek lexicographers, they can make mistakes. And they did. There's a lot of Greek words for sin. Okay? Not a lot, but several Greek words. And a whole lot of Hebrew words. Now, if you just say the word sin in Hebrew, one of the words for sin, chatha, avon, haver, whatever, you know, a lot of the words, you can say sin is sin. But chatha means to miss the mark. All right? Haver, or avon, that is, means to go out of bounds, to cross over. To go out of bounds and to cross over. Now, in Chaldee, in Syriac, and Arabic, in Ethiopian, French, amer, and in Latin, amaris, it all means an evil influence. It means confusion, it means muddy water, it means bubbly fermentation in wine or beer. It means leaven. All right?
What's the word again? Amer?
Amer.
Amer?
Yeah. All right. It means a collection or a collection of debris that clogs up a channel. All right? A collection of debris that clogs up a channel. How many of you ever heard of the Salton Sea? How did the Salton Sea begin? What made the Salton Sea? It was a Salton...
Wasn't it the farmer's irrigation water?
Well, what happened is that they diverted the Colorado River through some canals. Mara. They diverted the Colorado River, and they had some great big floods, and it collected up there, and it blew, washed away the banks. Now, that's what the word hamartia means. It means to cause a clog and wash away a bank. And when the bank washed away, it causes destruction. Wherever you have a flood, you have destruction. All right? But it means to go out of the beaten path. All right? And of course, destruction to natural habitat or natural flood killing life, causing destruction. All right? That's where the history of that word came from. The history of that word. Now, if nothing else, I want you to know what hamartia means. It means to go out of the pathway. It means it's like an obstruction. One time in the early 1800s, or the late 1800s, I guess, middle 1800s, down just about where the river bridge is on Chester Avenue, it washed out the banks there, and there was a great big flood. I think it was 1858, maybe, or somewhere around there. It washed the flood, and it washed a tremendous amount of oak trees, cottonwood trees, cypress, just all kinds of trees. sycamores all over what is now downtown Bakersfield. And people out there for like 10 years went out there and cut firewood because of that clog. That clog is hamartia. All right? And this is quite a verse. The one doing the sin. All right? The one doing the one practicing, habitually practicing the sin. Now,
your tape's breaking over.
Thank you, brother.
This little rascal here won't click like it's supposed to, and it won't go like it's supposed to, and I have to say work every now and then.
Yeah, it's working, I think. Maybe. Hebrews 12:1-3. See there, I told you we were going to go there, Brother Wallet.
Hebrews
12:1-3. Have you got it memorized, Brother?
Yeah, but I got to get the first word.
Well, flip it over there in your King's English there.
Yeah, well,
or wherever. I know you got it memorized.
All right.
All right.
It was 12 or 13?
Hebrews 12.
Okay.
Hebrews 12.
11. Okay. Wherefore, seeing also we are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us.
Now go back there about that sin. Go back there about the sin. Lay aside the sin which so easily besets us.
Yes.
The sin which so easily besets us. What is it in your life?
Don't ask.
Okay. Every one of us are different, isn't it? What is a sin that you held on that kept you from being saved for so long? What is it? Each and every person is different. It can be gambling. It can be lying. It can be adultery. It can be cheating. When you get back to gambling, you just got greed. That takes care of all of that. Wanting, taking, lying, doing whatever you got to do to get it. Because you want it for nothing. All right? Getting something for nothing. That's the whole story. All right? Whatever that sin is in your life, I hope you don't have all of them. That'd be terrible.
You got one, you gotta go get them all, buddy.
But I just think about it. There is something that bothers each and every one of us more than the other. There's one that really is so easily convinces you to sin, so easily leads you astray. All right? That thing which is makes you easy, makes you anxious. That one thing that's for your weakest point. Lay aside. What's it say now, Brother Wally? Anybody
lay
got
aside it? The sin that says so you beset us.
Uh-huh.
And run with patience.
Convinces us. Entangles us. All right? And let us run the race with patience. Looking ahead for the finish line. All right? Looking ahead for the finish line. It's not talking about works for salvation, people. You, once you're saved. That's period. That's over with. Salvation is a completed fact. And Ephesians 2:8 says, "For in grace ye are having been saved through faith." Where'd that faith come from? Jesus. Not from you. It's the gift of God. Not of works, lest what? Amen. That ain't what you boast. But then it goes on. And what it says? For we are what?
His workmanship.
For we are His workmanship. Created unto what?
Good works.
Unto good works. In other words, when you're saved, you change. There is a change. There is a metamorphosis. You change from a tadpole to a frog. You change from a worm to a beautiful butterfly. From an egg to a bird.
It becomes desire to serve.
You have a desire. Now, can that desire get confused every now and then? Because you still live in the flesh. Now, the next verse is a really another one. We could spend a lot of time on both of them, as far as that goes. The one doing the sin out of the devil, the one practicing the sin, is a child of the devil. The one habitually practicing the sin is out of the devil, diabolu. That comes, the devil, the word devil there, and actually it comes from dia and volo. Dia means what? Fruit. All right? And volo. We got a word ball from that word. What do you do with a ball?
Throw it.
Usually throw it. All right? And the word diabolos means to throw through or to kill and destroy. All right? Out of the devil, third person singular, present indicative, he continues to be the one practicing the sin. Now, it's just as normal for a sinner to act like a sinner. A hog acts like a hog. A dog acts like a dog. But they don't act like sheep. All right? God's sheep. Now, a child of God can sin, but you can't do it safely.
They come knocking on your doors.
You may sin securely, but safely never. Did you know that? There was a guy who wrote that back in 1500. I can't remember his name. John something or other, I believe. You may sin securely, but safely never. What's also it say in the book of Hebrews? All right, what's it say there in the book of Hebrews? Not in the... Just a little bit further on down the line. Verses 4 through 8, I think it is. Hebrews 12,
4 through 8.
Yeah, read that. That's good. You know, King James, it puts it real blank.
Okay.
Blatant there.
Hebrews 12, 4.
Uh-huh.
Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin.
Well, go on. Just keep on going.
Okay. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto sons.
Sons. If you're a son of God, you're a son of God, aren't you?
My son, despise not the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him.
All right. If you're a child of God, you can never sin safely. It's going to cost you something. Because you have a father who's not going to let you go in that direction. Right. Not without some stripes on you. It's just going to happen.
When the Lord loveth, he chasteneth.
Well, go on there, brother. You got her down there. Just keep on reading.
All right.
For whom the Lord loveth, he chastens.
For whom the Lord loveth, yeah, he chasteneth and scourgeth every son whom he receiveth.
Every born son, every heir. Every son of his, every one of his sons.
If ye endure chastening, God dealeth with you
as with
a son.
Son.
For
but
what son is he whom the father chasteneth not?
That's right. Go on just a little bit further now. We're not finished with that.
Okay. But if ye be without chastenment, of which all of you partakers, then are ye bastards and not sons.
All right. You're bastards and not sons. Bastard is an illegitimate child. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? You have no father. God is not your father. Somebody else is.
You got one, but you don't know who it is.
Yeah, that's right. You got one, but you don't know who it is.
Diabolos.
But it says up there who it is. Who is it?
Diabolos.
All right. Diabolos. That ought to make it real plain. A child of God may sin securely. You're not going to go to hell. But you can never sin safely. Because it's going to cost you something. It's going to cost you because God loves you. He loves you. Now, I've held you over a little bit tonight. We got one over here. We went past 7 o'clock a little bit.
You sinned, brother.
Huh? I sinned, that's right. I'm out of bounds. I went out of my boundary. I think... I hope you enjoyed the class.
Very much.
And come back next week and we'll... No, you can't come. What is next week? Is it the 31st?
Yeah.
All right, so the 31st. Well...
What's on the 31st?
We're not going to have church on Halloween. That's the thing. We're going to go pick our feet.
You mean you pay attention to that devil's holiday shame on
you? There will be no discipleship classes next week due to the Harvest Festival being on campus.
We call it this
thing. Now, I don't know... I haven't. You know what? I didn't even know this until right now. So sometimes they let us have our class anyway. I'll try to call you. Get me your phone number, so I'll try to call you and tell you what we're going to have. We may have it anyway. All right. Maybe they won't. You need to stay home and guard your house. I don't know. All right. But anyway, let's have a word of prayer, and I'm going to send you out in the world, and we'll come out next week, and we'll look, or the week after, whichever one comes first. All right. Whichever time we get to meet. All right. And we'll study the rest of this verse, and it's a beautiful verse. A beautiful verse. Brother David, would you dismiss us in prayer, please, brother?
Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you so much for allowing us to come and hear your word